everyone. This is Marcia Reiner, host of Profit with a Plan podcast. And my guest today is here to talk about, oh my gosh, franchising. But did you know franchising can be a great way for you to either get into the business world or add more business to your current business world, right? If that was a weird way of saying it. But you need to listen to today's show because this is valuable insights on franchising and the opportunities that open the door. And we're not talking food franchising, we're talking everything else on today's Profit with a Plan podcast. Hey, entrepreneurs, are you trying to make a bigger profit in your small business? If you're like most of us business owners, increasing your profitability is always on your mind, and you're probably looking for ways to grow your revenue while growing your company. Well, you found a podcast that shares ideas to help you do just that. I'm Marcia Reiner, known as the Profit Booster and a business growth strategist. I've helped tons of small business owners to establish and implement a tangible plan that guarantees increased profitability, guides your growth, and plans for your future exit. Because building a highly profitable and sale-ready business creates a win-win scenario. That's more money now and a windfall when it's time to let go. And I want to share strategies that I've learned with you on today's Profit with a Plan podcast. But before we get started, I have something special to share with you, my podcast audience. If you ever wanted to grow your business, avoid profit plateaus, operational headaches, and growth roadblocks? Well, I've created a brand new Profit Booster playbook just for you. You'll uncover three essential strategies and a quick way to take action on them. Now, this is not just a single page report. It's filled with impactful strategies, actionable steps, and expert guidance to help you elevate your profits. Go download this free playbook at boostingprofit.com. All right, my guest on today is John Ostenson. Sorry if I mispronounced that wrong. John is the CEO of FranBridge Consulting, an Inc. 5000 company, and he is the top 1% franchise consultant. He is also the best-selling author of the book Non-Food Franchising. John draws on his experience as a former Inc. 500 franchise president and a multi-brand franchisee in helping his clients select their franchise investments. John is a frequent contributor on franchising for publications such as Forbes, Inc., and Bloomberg. John, welcome to Profit with a Plan podcast.
Thanks for having me, Marcia. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. Okay, so we talk about, I always like to kind of warm up the audience and say, how in the world did you get into franchising, right? You started somewhere, and what was the attractive nature to franchising for you?
Yeah, you know, it started somewhere. I spent many years in the corporate world and had a great run, but wanted to do something more entrepreneurial and kind of stumbled into franchising, to be honest, you know, on the franchisor side. So went from a public company to private company, and that was Shelf Genie Franchise System. And I had the opportunity to serve as president and support our owners all across North America. And really, that's when I fell in love with the franchise model. You know, I just saw how so many backgrounds and so many different, skill traits you could step into a totally new industry, and how we provided the support and really helped them succeed. So, you know, long story short, partnered with the founder, we spun off, we've invested in franchises as franchisees ourselves, and bring all those perspectives into helping my clients on the consulting side.
Love it. Well, I just love the concept of franchising. You know, the phrase that business is hard, if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. It's because those first couple of years, or longer for many of us, but those first years of trying to develop the systems and processes and products and ideas and marketing and all that is so hard, right? And franchising has this model idea of a business in a box that you don't have to go through all those early struggles to get it out of the ground, right?
Yeah, you know, and I'll never sugarcoat it. Standing up a business is hard, whether it be franchise or non-franchise. It takes work, but we work with a lot of existing business owners. And what I found is for some, they're too entrepreneurial. You know, they want to put their thumbprints all over it. They think they're the smartest guy in the room. They're not willing to kind of follow a system. But then I find so many, and I'd say the majority of entrepreneurs that come to us and say, hey, we been there, done that. We know what it takes to get a business to that point, like you were saying. We'd much rather start on third base than first base, right? To be cliche. And some of the things that they love that there's a playbook that's they can just go execute. You know, it's been proven out in similar markets that the product market fit is there. You know, you've got streamlined supply chains, you know, where they can buy in bulk, whether it be services or products. You've got a coach on the sidelines in that franchise, or you've got a community of other franchisees that are living the same thing, and you're constantly trading best practices. I think oftentimes that gets overlooked. But, you know, again, to be cliche, you're in business for yourself, but you're really not by yourself.
I like that. Because it is a lonely journey at the top, right? You know, the business owner that has this idea and goes out and develops it and does everything, it's all up here. But in that franchise, that playbook is incredibly valuable. I love it. Okay, so you're an expert in the field of non-food franchises, like, you know, a Subway or a McDonald's or, you know, all those things that pop up on there. What kind of franchises are non-food franchises?
Yeah, and I'd start by saying, hey, you know, we appreciate the food guys. We certainly need them. It's just my humble belief is there are easier ways to make money, and most of my clients would agree with me. So, you know, the industries that are really resonating out there today are things that oftentimes get overlooked. It's things like home and property services, which could be insulation or dumpsters or gutters or flooring, things, you know, I jokingly call them non-sexy, non-trendy businesses. You know, these aren't going out of style, right? You know, but they're understandable, cash flowing. You know, then it's industries like health and wellness. Now, I will say there are probably some, you know, in there that would fall under that trendy banner, but quite a few that, you know, support mental health, or they support men's health, or things that, again, people are always going to need. You know, certainly industries that are somewhat recession resilient, things that people will always spend on, whether it be their pets, kids, their aging parents, the seniors. You know, we all know what a huge demographic that is. So businesses that cater under these kind of broader umbrellas, I'd say, are the ones that are really resonating. And the fun thing for us is, as we take our clients through a really streamlined exploration process, 90% of the time they end up purchasing something that was in an industry that was never even on their radar coming in.
Interesting. I think that that's surprising. I never thought that a men's health would be a franchise opportunity. And, you know, you think of health being, a vitamin supplement or something, or the gym, right? You don't think of something that could even be, because you've got a beautiful beard, it could be in men's skincare products or something along those lines that could still be a franchise opportunity. How often do business owners find something that resonates with them because of their needs, right? Or something along those lines? Or do they go just like random stuff? Never done carpet cleaning, but I'm going to go buy a carpet cleaner.
All the above. I just had a banker that bought a water mitigation and mold remediation company out in Salt Lake City, bought a bunch of locations. We've done a ton of deals in that men's health franchise, but that's one. And when I say men's health, we're talking about testosterone replacement therapy, TRT, which is huge out there now. I mean, but it's a highly fragmented industry. There's not a big brand. So if you're able to come in as a first mover and really bring a white collar approach and really professionalize it, there's such an opportunity. And so a lot of people have seen, I've had doctors buying in, but I've had, you know, corporate executives and existing business owners that are buying into it. And a lot of them say,
would you have to be a doctor to buy into that kind of franchise though, if you're offering men's health?
Yeah, you have to have an affiliated doctor with the business, but it doesn't have to be you. And so, and they help you source that individual where, you know, they review some paperwork and sign off every month. But that is an example to your question of, you know, a franchise that resonates with someone personally, because most of the guys that have been buying it say, hey, we use this anyway, we get it. But no, we have so many examples of attorneys, and I was just on the phone with a financial advisor a few minutes ago, that are getting into businesses that, you know, again, entirely outside of their training, but they can bring skill sets to the business. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing about franchising is, again, it takes work to stand up a business, but having that franchisor on the sideline, they can support that manager that you put in place to run the daily operations. So a lot of our clients continue to run their existing businesses, continue in their W-2 role in some cases, but they put a manager in place day one to run the business. And they can go to that franchisor for a lot of their support. So it takes some of the burden off of you. We all know the buck still stops with you as the owner, but if you have someone good in place and you've got a good franchisor on the sidelines, it makes it much more doable.
You know, I really like this idea of expansion, right? And expanding into things that maybe traditionally you wouldn't have thought of, like your financial advisor or attorney example, where they're jumping into a completely different market. As a profit person, right, looking at the numbers and trying to figure this out, you have gains in your current business that can be taken out and invested into a second business that can produce a return of your investment on. And what a fantastic opportunity to maybe, I'm not a tax advisor, nor do I play one on TV, but maybe you can get tax deductions and not pay taxes on that business income because you invested in a business.
Yeah. Well, I do play a tax advisor on TV. And I nerd out on this stuff and I find all every loophole and possible way to pay our fair share, but not pay a penny more. And so, yeah, there's so many synergies with business ownership. You know, I call it the trifecta. You're building cash flows, you're getting the tax benefits, and you're building an asset that you're going to be able to exit one day. So, yeah, I really love how you said that. I totally agree.
You know what? And these are investments, these kind of franchises that, like you said, you put some time and effort and energy into. But if you are winding down in your career and you're looking to potentially exit the primary business and you buy yourself a franchise that you have a manager in and that you oversee, this could be your semi-passive income that you can live on while you go golf and do the things that you want to do and still keep the brain sharp by, you know, going in and running the business, but you run it from a distance, right? Yeah. So there's lots of opportunities.
And there's
or you can jump full feet, you know, into the deep end and start running the company.
Yeah, exactly right. About half of our clients are owner operators. They jump in and they run the business, usually with the intention of replacing themselves and then moving on to the next thing. The other half are that semi-absentee, semi-passive executive model, as we'd call it. They put a manager in place day one. That manager, sometimes it may be their kid. You know, I've got clients who, you know, they love the idea of coaching and grooming a young person, whether it be their kid or just someone. It's actually a great way to attract talent to your existing business. I've got a client in South Carolina as an example. He does about $35 million a year in revenue across six different franchise brands. You know, I think he's got 30 territories, two men in a truck, moving services, one of his brands, and then quite a few property services. But every year he comes to me and says, "Hey, John, what are you seeing out there? You know, what should I get into?" And, you know, we'll get him set up with, you know, the one that's the best fit. But it's usually because he has a young guy on his team, young guy or young gal from his church, from his community, that he's given responsibility to, and they've proven themselves. And he says, "Hey, here's a little more responsibility. Go make us proud. Go run this business for us with the support of the franchisor." And he gives him a chance to coach and kind of elevate. But guess what? He attracts better people to all of his businesses because now there's a path to, you know, to build their own thing, to go out there and take on that responsibility. So, yeah, a lot of different ways to go about it.
I love it. It's very similar to the real estate investing space, right? You go buy cash flowing properties and you put a, you know, property manager to chase the rent and everything and repairs, and you reap the benefit of the cash flow that comes out of it. And the owner ends up, or the renter ends up paying down the mortgage for you. Whereas if you have this in there, you're forming young employees that could eventually buy you out, take over, they're running the business. It just seems a very similar parallel, at least in my mind, you know, money-wise.
Yeah.
Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. So when we're thinking about these kind of businesses, and you've given us some really great examples of things that are trending and things that aren't, before we go on to my next question, what are some of the areas that we might want to stay away from?
Yeah, you know, I'd say, again, I cut out half the market by not doing food. I also don't do hotels. Those are just different animals. And food is too trendy for me with too low of margins, too heavy CapEx. So, you know, we look for things that are understandable where there's already needs in the market, you know, that maybe aren't fully being met. And, you know, there's opportunity to come in and gain market share. You know, areas that we haven't been as active in the last year or two, I'd say, you know, we're doing a little bit less in the automotive space. You know, probably, you know, you still need Meineke and Midas. I mean, those are franchises, of course, you know, Maaco, Amco, all those. But I'd say we're probably doing a little bit less on the oil change side. We're still doing a few, but not as many. And it depends on what state you're in, of course. And then we're probably doing a little bit less in boutique fitness. I think it got a little overly penetrated there for a while. Now, that being said, there's a couple that we really like in the fitness space, but in totality, it's a smaller piece of the pie of what we're doing out there. So, you know, what to stay away from? For me, it comes down, you know, we look at the financial models, we look at the competitive advantages, we look at what our current owners and their franchise system saying about their experience. But then we take a hard look at the leadership team of these franchise brands. We want to see a good blend of industry experience and franchise experience, because just like any industry, you're going to have good players and you're going to have some that aren't as strong. So that's where we come in to try to help our clients.
You know, I think that's really, really important and valuable, because it's not just the business that you're buying, but the people you're buying the franchise piece to has to have a repeatable system and the support to help you achieve the growth and the direction and the successes that they got originally, yeah. Right? So I think that leadership role and the coaching that you get from it is super important as well. Because the last thing you want is a book and a box, right? You want people to help you. Well, how do I do this, right?
Yeah, that's part of the value of buying into a franchise system, right? So you have a built-in business partner, if you will, and support team that you're not having to staff up for, but you can kind of augment your team with what they provide. You know, you hit on something a second ago around real estate. I'd say probably 2/3 of our clients invest in real estate too. Maybe Airbnbs, maybe multifamily, maybe single family homes. But I think there's a lot of the same mindset in the cash flows and the tax advantaged opportunities. It goes hand in hand. And yeah, there's just a lot of franchises that seem to resonate with the real estate mindset and kind of what they're already doing. So right now with the real estate industry, the way it is, you know, you've got low inventory of homes, you've got high interest rates. We're seeing real estate investors in droves come join us on the franchise side.
Well, you know, I think the word investor is the perfect word for it, because you are investing in a business just the way you would invest in the old fashioned stock market, you know, or if you're not wild enough to go chase after crypto, you know, it's an alternative that should be thought of as an investment, right? You're taking your time, energy, and money, putting into something that you expect a return from. But that return can be exponential in a business model where you're capped in traditional investments like, you know, the stock market or, you know, the crypto kind of thing. You know, you don't have the same kind of risks to it. I think it's a beautiful complement to something you're already doing. And especially if you have a mindset for the business owner, you know, to be a business owner, and you can follow a rule book, right? Not that guy that wants to put his thumbprint on everything. That's more of a licensing idea, right?
And a good franchisor is going to let their franchisees be innovative and try new things. It's just you can't go too far outside the bounds.
Right.
But go ahead.
Proven system, right? I mean, that's what you're paying for, is a proven system that has shown that it can be done and duplicated over and over again. So speaking about pricing and proven systems, does it take hundreds of thousands to get into a franchise, or are there opportunities for a lower investment?
Yeah, certainly there are some really large ones that we have clients doing seven-figure deals fairly often, but a lot of our clients, I'd say 80%, are probably, when you look at the franchise fee plus the startup cost plus a couple months of working capital, kind of your all-in investment. I'd say the majority of our clients are getting involved somewhere between $150,000 and $300,000. I'd say those are kind of good, you know, kind of directional rails there. And, you know, but they're not all bringing cash to the table. We do have some that will use cash, but the majority will use like an SBA loan. That's very common, where maybe they put in $50,000, $100,000, and then they leverage the rest through an SBA lenders. They love franchising because, again, it's more predictable than a startup. A lot of our clients will use an old retirement plan, a 401k or IRA, and roll that over through what's called the ROBS program, where you set up the business as a C corp and you actually buy the business with your retirement plan and pay yourself a salary. Certainly other clients are using margin loans or HELOCs or friends and family.
Hey, Ken, you have friends and family, mom, you know, so, wow, what a great idea. I didn't realize that I knew you could buy real estate in a non-traditional IRA, but I didn't realize that you could take an investment 401k and invest in a business. Now, there are tax rules with that. Here comes my old, you know, financial advisor and CFP skills coming in. There's tax implications of when you, how you pay it out and so on. But I think the wrap of the type of account can protect and still keep that without a huge taxable situation coming on it. But very interesting. So back to the SBA, I know you're not an SBA guy, but you know enough to say, hey, here's an option for you. If you already have an SBA loan on your current business, can you go get a second SBA loan on this new business?
Yes, if that business has been up and running for, I don't know if they say a year or 2 years, you know, but you're going to want to show some good financials and then they'll let you get another SBA.
Okay.
I had a client recently that was trying to get an SBA. He was buying two franchises at the same time. And they said, we'll only finance one of those. You know, we won't finance two at the same time. So it comes down to, I think, just the timing of having had that business up and running when you go apply for the next one.
So did he have two separate businesses, or couldn't he take the two branches of it? Like if he bought a store here and a store there, couldn't he put it under an umbrella?
Oh yeah, if it was of the same brand,
oh, I mean,
most of our clients would buy multiple territories, multi units. That's very, very common within a brand. But he was actually buying two brands concurrently, so we had to set him up with some alternative financing for that second one. You know, and we've got other.
There's options.
There are options. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. I love it. So let's talk a little bit. I'm really interested in this concept because I think it's a fantastic business investment for our audiences, you know, to hear this. So when we talk about territories, right, how limiting or controlling or what kind of work goes into choosing whether that's a really good territory?
Yeah, well, the franchisor does most of the heavy lifting as far as they've got the technology, the software systems that show the demographics, and they show how many addressable businesses of XYZ, you know, whatever their criteria is, who their core customer base is, or might be number of average household incomes in households with an average income of $100,000. Let's say, like, they know what they're going after, and then they've got the software to show what's going on there. So they don't expect you to be the expert. Now, of course, you live in the market in most cases, and you know, and you, so a lot of times they'll drop a territory. My client will say, hey, well, I actually wanted these two zip codes, and they're usually flexible on that and you can adjust the territory. But you know, in a service-based business, you're looking at territories usually around 250,000 in population. In a retail brick and mortar customer facing business, you're probably more like, you know, 3 mile radius or 6 mile radius, just depending on the business in which it's protected. No one else can operate that business in there. So it is very common to have adjacent franchisees where maybe they're operating the next market over or two markets over. That can be great. It creates a brand awareness halo.
I was just assuming
you like your neighbors, right? You guys play well together. You know, I've actually bought out other franchisees in the past to expand my territory, and it gives them an exit. So that's another very natural M&A piece of it.
I like it. I like it. Cause I was wondering, you know, hey, if I set up my lemonade stand, right. And, you know, I set it up and I think I'm going good. And then I'll send the franchisor, because they're looking for opportunity, right? Starts putting them all around me. I mean, do I have any control or leverage to say, whoa, slow that down. You just sold it to me. I'm trying to get a market share and you're popping up, you know, five others right down the street from me.
Yeah, well, they couldn't do it in your territory. So you would know going in whether or not they could, how close they put them in. But no, they don't want to sabotage. They want
success.
Again, the better you do, the better they do. And so they want you to be successful. They'll, you know, good franchisor will do whatever it takes. You know, but oftentimes the clients will buy, let's say, three territories. You start your marketing efforts in a couple of zip codes within one of those territories, but then you've got that protected
buffer zone
in which to expand. Yes.
Love it. Love it. I think this is just fascinating. So what are some of the things that we want to make sure we're protecting ourselves when we come in and look at franchises, right? Because we've talked a lot about the good, right? We talked a little bit about the bad, but we really haven't gotten into the ugly of franchising. So what should we make sure that we're aware of when coming in and making these kind of investment decisions?
Yeah, you know, every franchise system has a franchise agreement that's part of their FDD, their franchise disclosure document. They've got to cross their T's, dot their I's, and there it's all audited. Yeah, but I always encourage our clients, before you sign on the dotted line, let's have a franchise attorney that looks at a lot of these, review it with you. And so we've got all those types of partners that we can bring in. Because I always want people to go in eyes wide open, understanding what's expected of them, what can they expect of their franchisor. I think not aligning on the expectations up front, just like anything, whether it be in marriage or any type of business partnership, you know, is important. So, I'd say that's the biggest thing. Again, franchising, just like any industry, you're going to have good players. You're going to have some that aren't as strong. I think especially in the food space, I mean, we have heard some stories of McDonald's forcing their franchisees to spend all this money to renovate. Again, all of that will be spelled out in the FDD. And so you'll know going in, does the franchisor have the ability to raise fees and by how much? And, you know, but I've been a franchisor. Last thing I wanted to do was tick off my franchisees, because all of a sudden you have a mob coming at you and that gives you a whole lot of headaches. You've got kids all over the country that are upset with you. That's not going to be a good day. So I wanted to keep my constituents happy and support them the best I can. And then it could be an absolutely beautiful thing.
I love it. How long is a franchise agreement typically established for?
Yeah, some are 5 years, some are 10 years. So I'd say those are the two most common. And yeah, they're going to renew that agreement unless you've been a total jerk, which
on either side, right? If the franchisor has been a jerk, the franchisee is going to say, I'm done, right?
Right. And I would say, you know, during my time at Chef Cheney, we never didn't renew someone. But it was something that we had to use in one situation where a franchisee was way behind on their payments and was shifting money from their Chef Cheney business into another business that they were running. And they owed us money and they weren't paying. And we'd done everything we could. And it's like, well, we're not going to renew you then. Like that was it. And so it's interesting when you read through the franchise legal document, sometimes you'll read it and say, that's a one-sided document. But when you understand the why behind things, a lot of it's to protect you from other franchisees taking your brand off the rails, right? That would hurt you. So the franchisor's got to have certain rights in order to maintain kind of the status quo.
Well, let's continue on the negative for just a second, and then we'll transition out of that. But say I've been a franchisee for 5 or 10 years, right? And I've developed and decided that, wow, I'm tired of feeding the franchisor. You know, I think I could take this on the road. Are there any limitations if I will go with a carpet cleaner, just as, you know, kind of, if I'm a carpet cleaner and I'm using ABC carpet cleaning and I want to leave ABC carpet cleaning, but still keep my carpet cleaning business, are there any limitations in that?
There are definitely limitations. You know, it'd be one of those conversations you have with the franchisor. And again, part of it, if you've been a great franchisee for them for many years, they may show more grace. But I think when you buy into a franchise business, I wouldn't go in with the expectation that you're going to start your own business in that industry. I mean, there are non-competes. I mean, they don't want to give you the secret sauce and their recipe, you know, and that's not fair to their other franchisees. If you go out and start another business that's doing the same thing, they've lost some of their intellectual property, you know, on their end, essentially. Sure. So,
but yeah, I mean, that's what I'm buying. Obviously that's not the intent, but I mean, you know, if I bought the idea, you know, I can still go out and repeat, but the non-competes would protect. And obviously none of this is desirable in the beginning, but you know, I mean, I've heard those horror stories, right? You know, And it's always just kind of like, well, what happens if? And like you said, originally, you have a good attorney on your side. Going into an agreement like this, you want to understand every angle and what ifs. And that's why you have a good attorney to help you, you know, play it out a little bit more and what could happen if.
100%. 100%. Now, I want people fully educated going in. But let's say you had a pool cleaning business. Well, you've been running it. You've learned a ton. You probably looked around and said, wait a minute, I could probably do landscaping. I could do, gutters. I could do, you know, I think you could certainly start other businesses because they're not competing, right? And you take your best practices that you've learned.
Sure.
And I always tell business owners, I think having a franchise in your portfolio makes your other businesses better because you're going to get exposed to insights and to processes that you haven't thought about putting in. And so, there can definitely be benefit there, but no, I want people going in eyes wide open. And I will say, is it a sure success if you buy a franchise? No, not everyone works out. Most of them do. I mean, when I look at my track record of my clients, I think it's like 5 or 6% are no longer still in business. That means 95% are. That's a great success record. And when I look at the 5 or 6%, the most common denominator, it wasn't the franchise system. Because I usually had successful franchisees, clients in that same system, it ends up being the individual. Mm. I've had this conversation with franchisors. Why can't we get them there? And they'll say, we've done everything we can, John. We've coached them. We've done this. We did this. They won't listen. They won't follow the system. And so it's always interesting to understand that story, because I found in more cases than not, it's the individual, not the franchise system.
Love it.
Because business ownership is not for everyone.
Of course not. I mean, really, it truly isn't. Like I said originally, if everybody could do it, they would be doing it. So now looking at the comparison, you know, this makes much better sense to, if you're going to start a business, right? Why not start something with a proven record, systems and processes, a community, the coaching, the leadership, and everything, the back of office stuff that, you know, you didn't know you didn't know. Why not do that rather than go out there and say, okay, I'm here. I hung my shingle. Now what? Right. You know, that it has everything there with a proven name that you could write on. Yeah. I mean, it's
interesting. Clients of mine that start a franchise oftentimes will come back and buy additional franchises, but some of them say, hey, I'm going to try my hand at, you know, starting my own thing on the side, or maybe my spouse is, but they're going to take their best practices from the franchise and implement them in another business. So I'd say have that long-term view. Think about, is it a portfolio you're building? Are there real estate assets? You know, are there businesses in there? You know, your next move, what's the right move to get you there? This may not be your last move that you make.
Mm, like it. All right, John. So this has been really interesting. I think franchise opportunities, it's not the first time they have huge conferences on these things. There's always opportunities, whether you want to get into food or whether you want to get into, you know, shared space like hotels or those kind of things, or whether you want to get into something that has inflation and recession proof backing behind it, that you know that you're buying into an investment that's going to continue to work. I think it's just the opportunities seem endless and really eye-opening to consumers who buy products all the time.
Right? You're exactly right. And that's why we're seeing more interest than we've ever seen. Our biggest challenge is that good opportunities are moving fast in good markets. So we're always trying to position our clients in the pipeline ahead of other candidates, you know, working our relationships with the franchisors, because we are seeing unprecedented levels of interest right now.
Okay, so here's one final question on that before we move forward. How long does it take to get a franchise? If I come in with my, let's just example, I got 50 grand in my pocket, I'm ready to go, I can follow instructions, how long does it take?
Yeah, you know, typically I would introduce you to your top 10 or so opportunities in your market that have availability, that if I'm in your shoes, here are the ones I want to be looking at for your situation. You know, usually you would narrow it down to 3 or 4 to have conversations with. I'd say from that first conversation with the franchise brand until you're at the point of signing, on average, it's probably around 60 days. Some clients move faster, some move slower, but I'd say on average 60 days. It's not that you're launching the business the very next day, but depending on the type of business, whether they're site selection, build out, whether it's you know, somebody you need to get some training, you know, in with the franchisor, some get hiring. Yeah, so maybe 2 months later, maybe 6 months later. So that's the general timeline.
Interesting. All right. I like it. So it's doable. It's relatively quick. And then seeing success because you've got a proven record and proven system, you're probably going to see success a lot faster. So within 6 months to a year, you're up and running with cash flow.
Yeah. In most cases.
Pretty good. All right, John. So where can listeners find out more about you with this opportunity and start to investigate a little bit, whether it's something they want to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd also love to give a free copy of our book to any of your listeners that would like one, a free downloadable copy. Our book, Non-Food Franchising. If you come out to our website, franbridgeconsulting.com, that's franbridgeconsulting.com. You'll get a pop-up there, share your email address. We'll reach out with the book. And if you'd like to take a next step and actually get on a call, I'd be happy to chat with any of your listeners, and we can talk about their situation and what they're looking to do. And you know, beautiful thing too, is it's entirely free to work with us. I'm essentially a real estate broker, but for franchises, we get a referral fee on the back end, and none of that gets passed on to our clients. So it's entirely free to work with us. So if you're in the game of franchising, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Wow, I like that. I didn't realize that. I thought there was a fee to hire you. So that's eye-opening there as well. So you can investigate, listeners, for free. You get a book, you get some education, you start to see the opportunities that are out there, and then you can start to see if it makes sense and it doesn't cost you anything but time. Sounds like a good opportunity to me. All right, listeners, I hope you found a couple ideas that you can put into your business that will help your business be more profitable. And expansion using other businesses can take the profits that you already have in your business and help them grow. And you know what better way to do it is to invest into two growing opportunities or three growing opportunities instead of just the one that you have. So I love it. I love it. And John, sounds like you're a perfect resource and something that can be done without a lot of investment to get started to consider it. So I love it. I'm definitely going to go get your book. All right. As I mentioned, how would you like to supercharge your business? Go download my new Profit Booster Playbook packed with three profit strategies and the actionable steps that you can use to make this your most profitable year ever. Go grab a copy for free at boostingprofit.com. And John and I would love to hear your comments on today's show. If you have any interest, what would that be? Or have you tried a franchise? Or are you thinking of franchising your own company? Hit us up in the comments. Tell us what you would like to do, and we will comment back for you. If I can get my mouth to work. And while you're at it, please subscribe, comment on today's podcast, and we'll get you to ring the bell for it. And as always, you can catch Profit with a Plan on any of your favorite podcast players. We're looking forward to more great profitable information on next week's show. So until then, make your plans and profit with them. Thanks so much, John. This is really valuable.
Enjoyed it, Marshall. Thank you.